Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
William Carey University Athletics.
Every sport you find exciting.
Crusader Talk.
Crusader Talk.
This is Crusader Talk.
Crusader Talk.
We're covering everything William Carey University Athletics. From the field to the court and the diamond. On Super Talk Hattiesburg 97.3 and supertalkhattiesburg.com.
And welcome everyone to another edition of Crusader Talk. Glad to have you with us as we are right in the midst of a full-blown crossover season. We've got basketball, baseball, swimming, softball kicks things into gear this week as well, and heck, beach volleyball had a scrimmage as well this week. I mean, there's all kinds of things William Carey Athletics going on right now. If you are not in the loop, you are missing out on opportunities. Caleb Hamill, Josh West with you here on this episode. Pre-recording today as Josh is going to be covering Tougaloo on Monday night at 7, so that one's live on the radio in place of where we normally do the podcast, but we've had so much go on over this past week, we could not miss out on an opportunity to at least on demand get everybody up to speed. Josh, I don't know how we could fit it into a one-hour radio show anyway, so it's probably best that we did this to where we have the freedom of online length of a podcast.
Yeah, certainly is. I was on campus on Friday. I ran into beach volleyball. I had a chance to, you know, visit with some of our coaches and staff, and a lot of exciting things going on, as you mentioned. Got to see Coach Halford from a distance, and he was on the move, a man on a mission with opening day, you know, right on the horizon. And so we'll be talking about them winning the series this weekend. So just a great time to be a Crusader.
Absolutely is. Hey, that was some good fish on Friday, too. Over in the calf. I think we'll be back kind of alternating maybe between Fried Chicken Wednesday and Catfish Friday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, it is the – that's one of the best-kept secrets in Hattiesburg. You know, we talk about it in our little circle, but not a better place to go grab lunch in Hattiesburg, and especially for the price.
Absolutely. Another good secret that's being kept right now, although I think the cat's out of the bag now, is the swimming program at William Carey, as they have been on a tear to start off their inaugural season. Coach Robert Gonzalez joins us over the phone here to start off the show. Coach, you're about to embark upon your team's first ever conference tournament, and boy, what a showing y'all have had so far. Before we get into the preview of all that, I want to take us back to whenever y'all hosted your first ever meet down there on the coast. Tell us a little bit about how that was for your group to finally get to play in your home state more as your home venue, if you will.
I think it was a really good experience for our swimmers to be able to, you know, go to their home away from home, so to speak. It's going to be our home in, you know, beginning of the 2026-2027, being down there on the Biloxi campus full time. But being able to kind of be that home team, get that home vibe, having, you know, a few hundred people over there to be able to support. You know, we had a tremendous showing from, you know, the entire leadership here at William Carey. We had a lot of the students and the faculty make the trip down there. And then being able to see all the families of the swimmers to be able to partake in the event. And then everything was orchestrated perfectly. We had great weather. It was before, you know, we had 9 inches of snow down here, you know, about a week or two ago. But, you know, perfect weather, you know, great competition. Everything, you know, stayed right on schedule. It was good energy, and we were really happy with it. So hopefully that's the first of many opportunities for us, and we want to thank the city of Biloxi for allowing us to use the pool facility. And until it becomes our permanent home in a couple of seasons, you know, being able to host our home meets there is always an exciting time for us.
You know, Coach, for me, it's just the excitement that this sport brings, and it's contagious for your energy. I know that when I cover track and field, I love the instant gratification, if you will, of, you know, winner, 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 winner. It's the same type of energy at swimming. What has fans' reaction been like? Because I know that my interactions with our staff, like you said, our athletic administration and so forth, they love the energy at these meets.
There's an instant gratification for the fan that I think is exciting, but it's also something that our swimmers and, you know, same thing with a track runner and really any athlete, is that delayed gratification of months and years of progress and work to be able to have that moment. You know, sometimes as a fan, you only get to see the peak performance and not be able to see the nitty gritty daily, hourly actions that these swimmers have to do on a, you know, just a constant repetitive basis. these guys have worked really hard. These girls have worked really hard. And we, you know, we were so proud about their in-season progress from where they were getting to us and the development that they've had right now, just through 4 months. And now hopefully, you know, we're doing everything we can to peak them at the right point right now with conference coming up and then trying to qualify as many of our swimmers to nationals in Indiana coming up first week of March.
Coach, would you say that, and to use a swimming term, from the feedback that you've gotten, certainly with, I would think, from a recruiting standpoint and the energy you'll feel from that it's been a splash, that there's been such a need for more swimming programs, that this is filling a really big need in this area?
I think it's really interesting right now because, you know, you talk about where we were a year, maybe a little over a year ago, when we first announced the launching of the program starting for this year for competition, and how we were having to recruit swimmers. Now swimmers, as we get more and more exposed or have some success to show improved, you know, proof of concept, developing, that people are starting to seek us out. And I think that's just been a complete 180 turnaround from where it was a little over a year ago. And so when it comes to what you were asking about, you know, unfortunately, a lot of sports right now, a lot of programs nationally, and it's not just in the swimming community, we see a lot of programs and schools removing some of their programs. And so I think the energy right now from our school is that we're adding sports while you have a lot of schools out there that are cutting sports. And I think that right there shows that the entire trajectory of the school as far as wanting to grow, wanting to build, wanting to have success. And I think all those successes and energies combined is what allows William Carey to take that momentum forward and compete against, you know, much larger states, larger population areas. I don't think we're going to be a secret too much longer.
And I would agree with that sentiment, because when it comes to that inaugural year one, it's people trying to figure out, oh, this program actually is real. It actually exists. When you look at emails that come in to parents or to potential players, they're like, what's a William Carey? I've never heard of the swimming program. Well, that's because it's the first year. Now you've got a little bit of street cred going with you. And that kind of brings me to think about this story that I heard earlier today about a player for you and Braden Jacobs. He's a guy that comes from Florida and kind of had his plan set to be a part of a Florida school to swim, but things took a turn. And tell us a little bit about how you got in contact with him and what's happened with him since he's been on campus.
I don't know if you've ever had a chance to speak to Braden, but you know, in our sport, there are a couple of states that is very challenging to go into and recruit. Certain states really do a heck of a job of doing everything they can to lock in their high school talent. Florida is one of those states where, you know, so many in the swimming community, they'll go to some of those two-year schools, they'll swim there for free, and then they'll go to the bigger school their junior and senior years, and they're able to save so much money because they're able to stay in the state. That's part of their incentive program. And when we were, you know, at the time, just starting the recruiting process, because he was the first guy that actually signed with us, he made his verbal commitment. At that point in time, it was really a leap of faith. You know, every single swimmer that we recruit in year one, they had to take a leap of faith of this program. We're going to make it work. You know, we're going to work, you know, tirelessly to establish an environment, create a community of swimmers that are going to push you every single day to make you a little bit better. But until that first one signs, it's like a domino effect. That first one's always the toughest one. And we really lucked out in getting some really high quality swimmers, but also high quality people to be able to bring into a program. You know, he was voted as team captain on the boys' side. And, you know, he exemplifies that on a daily basis, not just in the pool, but also out of the pool.
Yeah, I could tell already from the accolades that he's been able to collect, thinking about the most recent meet in which he won two long distance swims, both the 500,000 yard freestyle. But another big thing, and this takes us out of the sports realm for just a bit, and it's a whole lot more important, but in the game of life, that Braden, as I saw on Sunday at church, has decided to make Jesus Christ his Lord and Savior and had baptism with a lot of different of his swimming friends involved there to watch. What's it been like seeing him grow in his spiritual journey?
It's been a really fun road because all of these guys are so close to one another and all of them come from different backgrounds. And he was right around a couple of his teammates, you know, some of his closest friends who also, you know, have a similar journey, a similar path. and being able to make that decision and being surrounded by the people who you love and people who you didn't know a year ago, who have, you know, who are now your companions, who are now your teammates, who are now your brothers. And to see that entire family develop and blossom, that's how you keep a team together. That's how you keep a team together, because our sport can be very notoriously individual. And it's important to keep that camaraderie of togetherness in a sport like us, inside of a sport like ours. And that was a fantastic moment for everybody who was a part of that.
All right, Coach Robert Gonzalez, now time to preview the Sun Conference tournament that is ahead of us. William Carey, obviously typically an SSAC team for most athletic venues, but this one, SSAC doesn't have enough teams to put that sport on its docket, so Carey plays in the Sun Conference. And so with that, what teams stand out in the tournament ahead of you that are going to be the biggest competition, and where can Carey most likely shine ahead of this postseason event?
Yeah, we'll see how long we stay in the Sun Conference, because actually our addition made us the sixth team in the SSAC. So we'll see if the Sun Conference is something that we stay a part of for years to come, because, you know, as teams add and teams drop, those things can always change. It's a very fluid dynamic in sports around the NCAA, around the NAIA. It's just a nationwide thing. As far as our conference goes now, we have the number one ranked, the number two ranked, the number three ranked teams in the entire country, all inside of our same division. So there are going to be races that this week are going to be just as competitive, if not more competitive, actually, than the national championship will be. You know, programs, you know, like Kaiser and St. Thomas, who have won, you know, they won the national titles last year on the men's side, on the women's side, respectively, and they were runner up on the other side. So, you know, we're going to get our feet wet very, very quickly. No pun intended. I mean, we're going to be battle tested. We've had some great competitions already this year. You know, for the most part, most of our meets have actually been against Division II programs. So we're used to seeing fast swimming. Right now, it's just a matter of, you know, as a group of freshmen going to conference, do you keep the nerves under control? Yeah, I mean, you want to have you want to be anxious, but not too anxious. You want to be ready, but not overly. So it's just a matter of just, you know, keeping calm, being ready to strike when the iron's hot. And I think right now our bodies will physically be there. But now we just got to make sure that the state of minds are where they need to be. And there are some races that I really look forward to. And I would just kind of point to some of our guys, relay teams, who are going to be, you know, showcased. I think the 800 freestyle relay on the opening night is going to be one of those defining moments, potentially for a first-year program, that kind of put us on the map. Because we do have, on the guys' side, two relays that currently are ranked in the top three in the entire country.
Wow.
And so to see how they compete on day one together, four freshmen, you know, do you just go in there? Do we just go to Florida and take on some of these Southeastern programs and say, okay, y'all won nationals the last 5 years, but we're going to try to push you and put everything we can on day one. So if people aren't aware of who we are right now, they will know who we are by the end of the weekend.
Hey, I love it. I love the sound of that. For an inaugural season of William Carey, we use the phrase on this podcast a lot, you're playing with house money. You can go out there and show the world who William Carey is. And as Josh unintentionally or maybe intentionally used the pun earlier, make a big splash here to start off this season and the first time y'all are in the conference tournament. Coach Gonzalez, best of luck to y'all, and we look forward to hopefully visiting with you down the road.
I appreciate it. Thank y'all for the time and the support.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
All right. Good conversation with Coach Gonzalez. Man, it is awesome to have a swimming team, especially already a successful one here at William Carey. You know, they're just falling in line, it feels like, with every sport that we've got going on right now. I mean, Josh, I think back to I guess it was early December, I had a conversation with Dr. Burnett just talking about athletics of William Carey in general. And he was saying, you know, volleyball last year was the only team with a losing record. And now they're in the national tournament at the finals site. And it's just like, how did we get here to where we're in a position that not many schools are, to where just about every single athletic program is winning? We just have so much winning, you know?
you're going to get sick of winning. No, I agree with you. And this is a perennial now, becoming a perennial top five program in the country. We saw that last year. If Kerry would have been able to find a way to pull out a national title, which is not something that just happens, but if that would have happened last year, Kerry could have won the Learfield Directors Cup for the top NAIA program. Instead, they finished fifth. So, but the momentum from that has carried over, and it feels like even grown this year. And yet, Kerry gets pushed within its own league by Mobile for the cup inside the league. So it really is remarkable, some of the top tier programs. And I'm going to tell you right now, Caleb, you were over at baseball this weekend over at Milton Wheeler. Abraham Baldwin, in particular, like, let's just take their women's program, for example, a young program that, hadn't had basketball in years, coming up from JUCO, becoming a 4-year institution, bringing in a staff that wanted to bring in freshmen, no seniors on the team, on either team, by far majority freshman teams. They looked the part. They had the coaching. They had the energy. They played with the effort. They've just got to make shots. They've just got to get more seasoned. You'll have another Georgia team in our league that is going to be extremely good and extremely competitive. So it just talks about how this league in the Southern States Athletic Conference continues to grow. So yeah, it's exciting because you have the our side of the league, so to speak, the Faulkners, Mobiles, Loyola, William Carey, Tennessee Southern, formerly Martin Methodist. So much history there and rivalries. And then your Dalton States and your Bruton Parkers, who have a lot of history but not recent history. Then you're adding in Abraham Baldwin and so forth. So, yeah, I'm super excited.
That's just one thing that pointed out, or that you pointed out that stood out to me, was they have all freshmen, you said, on their teams right now for basketball?
Majority freshmen, by far. So let's just say like 2 juniors, 2 sophomores, or 3 juniors, 2 sophomores, and 10 freshmen.
That's crazy.
Majority freshmen. They're building those programs the right way. Not loaded with transfers, not loaded with... but they're building it with freshmen and building it from the ground up, if you will. So look out. I mean, yeah, that's what we're talking about. Absolutely, they are, which they should be, right? No pressure right now. Build it that way. We're seeing the same thing in swimming. Coach is building it the right way here at Kerry. So very quickly, they've had success. We kind of felt they would from our early conversations with Coach about swimming at William Kerry. And immediately getting on the map, immediately having success, gelling quickly. It means that every indication would be that very quickly this swimming program at Kerry could be scary good really quick.
Yeah, and I do see how much of a deal it makes sense there for especially the swimming program, because you know you want to grow this program from the ground up, and like just kind of we alluded to Abraham Baldwin, but you know, with them you grow the friendships, the relationships, because you have a lot of team atmosphere going on there with the relays, all the different training they go through to get to these different meets. Swimming is a very big friendship oriented sport. You know, you can go into others that, yeah, you have little pockets of friendships, and you know, your shortstop doesn't necessarily have to have a great relationship with the right fielder in baseball. Basketball, you probably do want to have a more gelled team when it comes to, you know, their relationship on the court, of getting to know each other's feelings of passing and all that. But swimming, you know, though it's one individual swimming at a time, it is one of those where camaraderie really does make a big impact on there. And I'm glad to hear from Coach Gonzalez about how this team is already gelled, how much they're, you know, piggybacking off one another, already, you know, life change happening because of the different groups and the way they've hung out with one another. I mean, that's more important than anything that we could talk about result wise on the field or in the pool. That, in hearing about Braden Jacobs and he getting baptized this week, is awesome to hear. And again, that supersedes any championship we could be talking about on this podcast. And that to me is my highlight of this past week, compared to baseball starting their season and Kerry getting a lot of wins in basketball. But as we move forward, let's go ahead and talk about some of this basketball. We've got to, you know, recap a lot from this week. Abraham Baldwin came into town Saturday, had a big couple of games with Life University back on Thursday. We'll cycle back to those first, as, boy, the guys especially – That was a gauntlet, man, to go from what I thought was about to be a loss at the end of regulation or overtime turned into a double overtime win. And I listened to you at the end of that game, and I'm telling you, it was intense down there right to the final baskets.
That was the first ever win for Cary men's basketball against Life. That's a Life team that came in receiving enough votes for 26th in the poll, 23rd in the RPI. So that's a quad one win, third of the season for Coach Knight's squad. So they're now 3-3 in quad one, 3-2 in quad two. And as a sports fan out there, you know what that means. And I think a lot in terms of like college baseball and different, you know, sports around, maybe even some of the higher levels, even some of the NCAA levels with the quad rankings. So Cary's 8th in the Southeast region. And for example, Tougaloo's 11th in that same poll. And Life was 6th in that same regional poll. So that was a huge win for Cary. Huge RPI booster. That got a win number 16. But what a week for Cary. And it's not over. A stretch of essentially 5 games in about 10 days and 4 games in 8 days, if you will, if I'm getting my numbers right there, because you go and you win an overtime thriller where Bruton Parker hits a buzzer beater over in Mount Vernon. You win at 106-99 in OT. You essentially lose at the buzzer to Middle Georgia, 75-72. They hit a 3 with 2.4 seconds left. Jamal Taylor, their little guard, point guard, who had played great all game, under 20% three-point shooter. Of course, he nails it from about 10 feet beyond the arc.
That's always how it happens, isn't it?
I mean, he threw it up. He didn't realize he could have taken 2 more dribbles and would have gotten closer and would have missed it, and we would have gone to overtime again. But, of course, he was feeling it. Didn't come close to touching the rim. Splashed it in. Then this game was 25 ties, 25 lead changes. I've never been a part of something like that. I don't know if I'll ever be a part of something like that again. Coach Knight confirmed that's right up there at the top of any of the games he's ever been with in his 43 years. And that is saying a lot. I don't think he doesn't just throw things like that out there from somebody who's basically seen it all. If he's seen another one like that, it's in the distant memory. That's one that sticks with you. 50 moments is how I described it, where neither team would budge. And then Cam Brown had 5 points for most of that game. He got heated up in the end of regulation, both overtimes. Dylan Brumfield goes for a career high 34 at William Cary. Talked to Dylan after the game. He had 46 at Oak Grove in a game. You know, Ashton Campbell had 50 in a game at Forest County AHS, but his collegiate high was 36 at Jones. So that was his career high at William Cary, besting his previous career high of 29 against Faulkner. But Brumfield goes off. Brown has 15 of his 20 late in the game. Campbell gives you tying a season high, 25 points. Cary needed all of it in that game against a very good Life team. They had a couple of players that were just matchup nightmares. Cortez Johnson and Chase Harris, 6'6 point guard, if you will, and a 6'8 kind of hybrid player, guard forward, who was just so athletic, so long, jumped so well. We could not keep him off the boards.
How did you get a 6'6 point guard in the NAIA?
Win. Yeah, 6'6 point guard in NAIA. You're exactly right. And, you know, where Dylan Brumfield is a nightmare, for most teams we play, you can't really guard Dylan. His ability to create and his ability in the mid-range. The only thing that's holding Harris back, he can't shoot it like Brumfield can in the mid-range. He hit a big mid-range jumper in that game. Fans that were there remember that. But he can't shoot it like Dylan can. And what I'm left with over the weekend was Dylan and Ashton's ability to finish through contact, to be able to create off the bounce, and then get up in the air, absorb contact, and then finish through contact to have a chance at a three-point play. They do it as good as anybody in our league. Some of the best that you'll see anywhere in the NAIA. And when you've got those type of finishers, that goes a long way. And this is a Cary team that just continues to win games. Caleb, they're 17-6 now. That RPI is going to be, you know, hovering in the low 30s. And, you know, fans that are listening to this podcast, maybe on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, or maybe it does, you know, get out Monday night and people are listening to it somewhere around the Tougaloo game. Kerry's got that top 25 Tougaloo matchup in Jackson on Monday night the 3rd. So it's a really good stretch of games where Kerry can really get some really good resume boosters there.
Yeah, so it's a big RPI booster if Kerry can get those that win at Tougaloo. If not, you know, it's a little tough.
Doesn't hurt you because you're on the road.
That's true, yeah. From a road perspective and a high RPI team, it's not the worst, but obviously you want that win. And so, yeah, take that with you. If you're a listener right now, you probably already know the result of that, and we don't right now because that's how time and podcast posting works. Final just thoughts on the men's basketball side as we kind of put a wrap-up on the weekend, and then we'll look back at the women's team. But Abraham Baldwin, a game that saw a lot of back and forth before Kerry could finally pull away.
Yeah, I mean, Ashton Campbell injured his left hand. He's going to get that checked out on Monday the 3rd, so we'll know a little bit more. We don't think that there's anything significant there, knock on wood. You know, you just don't – you hope not. You pray not. But we don't think he could have played through it on Saturday. He played through it on Saturday, played 26 minutes. It's his left hand. It's his non-shooting hand. The swelling had gone down. He could move it. We were looking at it. There was no like point on the top of one of his fingers. But what happened, Caleb, is that he went down and he stuck that left hand out there to try to brace himself. And those fingers bent back on the hardwood. So, I mean, it could have been, you know, season over type thing potentially for Ashton. But, you know, he's a tough kid and he was able to play through it. Dylan tweaked his ankle in just a voluntary workout on Tuesday, was by himself in the gym, tweaked the ankle, tons of treatment Tuesday, Wednesday, braces it up, goes off for a season high 34 on Thursday, played somewhere in the neighborhood of 45, 46 minutes on Thursday, was completely gassed, still went off for 18.6 rebounds, 5 assists, and played 30 minutes on Saturday. So that extra day of rest for Dylan is going to be huge. He was talking to Coach Knight after the game and was like, yeah, Coach, I'll have a little more energy. He was gassed. The team was flat. Coach knew they would be flat. He didn't really go and get on them real hard after the game. It's just part of the ebbs and flows, and especially with that run that Kerry had been on. Two road trips in Georgia, couple of buzzer beaters. You win one, you lose one. You win one in overtime, then go double overtime against arguably the best team in the league and win, which puts Kerry in that conversation as the best team in the league. And you're just spent, and then you get to play Tougaloo on a Monday on top of it, but no midweek game in the conference. You don't play again until Saturday. So Kerry will definitely, men and women, need that Thursday night off this week, no question.
Finally get a break, you know, after this Monday meeting with Tougaloo. As we look at the conference standings right now, as it stands, William Kerry in men's action, second place in the West behind Mobile. Disparity in game amounts right now because Mobile's 9-2, Kerry's 10-4, Faulkner, the next best team, at 7-4. So eventually these teams are going to catch up with as far as how many games they've played. And atop the other side of the league, Dalton State 11-1, Life at 9-3 after Kerry has handed them a loss. They battle back and get a win on Saturday. But all in all, Kerry's in prime position right now, just a matter of how the rest of the conference turns out before we get closer and closer to the conference tournament beginning, just kind of depending on where the seeding is going to be and how Kerry could try to lock up one of those automatic bids for the national tournament and get back in there. All right, now let's look ahead to – or do you have one final thought on men before we transition?
One final thought on men was this. Thank you. I do appreciate that, is that for Kerry and the league – Southern States Athletic Conference, depending on if the favorites, if you will. So let's just take Dalton State and Life get to the semis out of the East. And then if it's William Kerry Mobile, get to the semis out of the West. And I'm not looking at the bracket. I don't know if that's technically possible. But if it is, it feels like it could be a four-bid league depending on where the upsets lie and where they fall. Because you could have four teams in the mid 20s or better in RPI. So this could be a four-bid league, which would be extremely exciting for the Southern States Athletic Conference.
I like it. I like the sound of that, definitely, especially when you consider all the different Midwest teams and those in, you know, Ohio Valley and Northeast. All those schools are typically your perennial powers and, you know, other ones that are always getting multiple bids in there. RPI shows that SSAC is having an uptick this year compared to the normal years that it has had. So that's awesome to see. And I hope the women's basketball
can be there. And now I've got another thought. Now I've got another thought, Caleb.
Yeah.
And that is, that's a long shot, I guess, for four bids. So for it to be three bids, it just feels like life looks like a lock. It feels like Dalton State feels like a lock. So then you're thinking, okay, it's Mobile and Cary potentially for an at-large because it's a two-bid league. The league feels good enough for at least one at-large bid. It could come down against Cary and Mobile. So that game on the 20th of February at Clinton Gymnasium, folks, we need you out there. Got to have you there. I know it's usually a standing room only almost type of crowd. If there was any year that we needed, we could be honoring the girls as conference champions already, and we could be, that could be a huge, huge game for the men. And the ladies could clinch the conference regular season championship that night with a win. So mark the calendars for February 20th.
All right, definitely got to do that. And hey, if you think about it, just the likelihood of the SSAC getting four bids, I know we keep circling around on this, but I'm pretty sure the women's side of the SSAC last year had four bids. I believe it was
correct.
Loyola, Mobile, no, Cary, and Bruton Parker snuck in.
Bruton Parker pulled it off with an upset. So, but I'm looking a little bit further past in my mind, past Cary and Mobile and Life and Dalton, and you would have to get, you know, somebody would have to reel off like a Loyola or a Middle Georgia, someone like that, who is capable talent-wise. I think a Faulkner, maybe, that you would think they would be. Now, those are all three teams that I think could win the tournament, no question. But they would need to win the tournament or get to that championship game to get one of those automatic bids.
Yeah, you definitely would. All right, women's side of things, business as usual. I feel like not a lot would you say to take away from the two wins this week of Life and Abraham Baldwin?
Well, it just really good weekend to be able to get a lot of players playing time, right? Because for Coach English, this is a group, they've won in their last four games, they've won by an average of 22 points a game. And they've not been trying to run the score up. They have played a lot of players, a lot of minutes. And it's been good to see different players in different games go out and really show some spark. Great to see Gabby Gallup. We interviewed her after the ball game against that was on Thursday night against Life. Carries up by 30, and Gabby's out there doing what she does, taking charges, right? Doing what she took two charges in that game, had a couple of rebounds, had 4 points. And just to talk to her, sixth-year senior, coming back after an ACL injury, could have hung up the sneakers, and she didn't. She stuck with it. McKaylee Randall, we haven't had a chance to talk about her 10 points against Middle Georgia. She proved that she's ready when called upon to come in and fill a role, and a lot of times in pressure situations. Another player that I thought is playing really well, Maddie Ladner, good gracious. Perhaps the best athlete on the team. And I think kind of goes without saying that she probably is. I'm not giving her enough credit. She's got to be the best athlete on the team. So explosive, so athletic, can do so many different things. And she's coming off the bench. Was good to see the true freshman, Brooklyn Cuevas, hit a couple of threes against Abraham Baldwin. She had 8 points in 9 minutes, new season high for her. Doesn't get many minutes, but she puts in the work every day. So she will be ready when she matures into an expanded role later in her career. And then Jenna Gehriger, she comes out and hits 4 threes against Abraham Baldwin, 12 points, 5 rebounds, played 31 minutes, stayed out of foul trouble, and was able to have 12 big points. And we talked to her in the post game as well. Warren is Warren. Corpus is Corpus. Blakeney's Blakeney. They keep putting up double-doubles almost every game, even in limited minutes. Leah Sutton, super clutch. Every time they need a bucket, it seems like it ends up in Leah Sutton's hands in the mid-range or tucked away in a corner on the wing somewhere, and she just knocks down the shot and settles everything back down. Now, that's a really solid team. We didn't even mention Cher. Addie Cher, the true freshman out of PCS, has been really good off the bench in that point guard role. It'll be a 7-8-9-player rotation. Throw in a Dede Cuevas, the 6'2 sophomore out of Pass Christiane, into that mix. They'll tighten up the rotation here over the last couple of weeks into the tournament. But this is going to be a rested team, a very rested team, Caleb. They went basically a couple of games over a month period in and around Christmas. They only play three conference games from here on out in February. They added in the Tougaloo game. They added in a non-conference game on the 15th against Talladega. But they're not going to just put a ton of minutes on those legs. And I think they're sitting at 13-0 in the league. They could win one more this weekend against Tennessee Southern. And if they get help from Mobile, they could clinch the regular season and that automatic berth this weekend on the 8th.
That's so crazy.
And then if they do, isn't that crazy? And, you know, already hit one of their goals. They're 20-0 right now. Number 6 in the RPI, number 1 in the Southeast region rankings. And 20 wins was one of their goals. They hit it on February 1st. Super exciting. And so, you know, this is a team that all the goals are sitting out there in front of them. A little sad that Clinton Gymnasium is not a vetted venue for the NAIA as a host site. That's a process you got to go through well in advance. But Cary's riding a 21-game home winning streak. How cool is that to be talking about those type of numbers with Coach English's program? COVID kind of derailed maybe a similar year to this a few years back. And for it to come back around again, and we saw it coming, and we've been talking about this since the season ended last year, to see it be coming into fruition, and for this team to be so hungry, so focused, very much like women's soccer, Caleb, that they do not get too high or too low. That's really good for where they want to get to.
It's an awesome spot to be in. I mean, you know, Mr. Flair for Dramatic over here talking right now. I hate that it's not going to come down to a possible coin flip like it was last year, depending on all the results in the last week of the year. But it is nice to have the opportunity to win a conference championship outright. Wow, this early, if all goes according to plan, as early as this weekend. Could be great. Could be an awesome scene there at Clinton Gym. Another awesome scene on campus recently was the return of baseball, as the old stick and ball sports are right back in the swing of things. Softball will be starting off their season this week. As we record, baseball just finished up a 3-game set with Pikeville. Took 2 out of 3 in that one. Lost the finale as they were going for the sweep. This is a series where William Cary really dominated well in that first game after getting 8 runs in, I believe it was the 5th inning against Pikeville. Josh, they faced a guy on Friday night that started last year, basically every Friday night game, had 12 appearances, all of them starts, 9-0 record, 9-0. And they finished as a team 3rd in the Appalachian Athletic Conference, first year for them in that league. And that's a league that has a lot of stout teams. And I don't know how up-to-date you are on the different teams of NAIA baseball, but fans out there that have been following it for a while, you'll recognize Reinhardt, Tennessee Wesleyan, who was in the NAIA World Series with Cary last year, Milligan, who was in the opening round in Hattiesburg last year, made it to the final game. Bryan, Tennessee, that's a team that we've seen sometimes in softball, sometimes in baseball. And then a couple others that maybe have not had as good of years as they wanted. Union College out of Kentucky, which now they've changed their name. They're Union Commonwealth University. It couldn't be Union University because that's already taken by the school in Jackson, Tennessee. But Truett McConnell and a couple others as well. Johnson, Tennessee, Montreat, all of those. Big baseball conference, if you will. And they finished 3rd last year, lost a lot of pieces, and may not be quite the same team they were a year ago. But some might have figured that a loss to Pikeville to close out that series would be a big black eye for William Carey this year. Yeah, time will tell in this one as they lost that finale 6-3. But honestly, I think you see a lot of bright spots for this team, for William Carey, that is, as we've started off 2025. And a big one that I think is my highlight of the weekend is Eli Collins, a name that people in this area would know fairly well. Eli was a guy that played at Southern Miss last year, primarily as a pinch runner to check in. I don't believe he recorded a hit in his outings at Southern last year, but comes in, Josh, night number one, and goes a perfect 4-for-4 with 4 RBIs. What a turnaround and a welcome to the NAIA than to go a perfect 1,000 for your Carey debut.
You know, all I can think about is that, you know, Eli is going to be kind of a trendsetter for where the future of college baseball is going with the limited rosters at some of the higher levels, or it might be all of the higher levels. But the way that that has been restructured, there are going to be so many good players that are looking for a really good home to play college baseball. And here's William Carey coming off back-to-back World Series, tons of tradition, tremendous facilities, great trajectory, so much energy across campus. Just hearing Ben Smith, who was struggling on Friday, first time it really hit him that he wasn't going to be in the dugout coaching in that game, moving from the assistant coach role there.
Rest assured, coach he role positioned himself as close as he could to the dugout to watch that game.
Yes.
Got in the golf cart at the end of the fence.
Yep. And so, but to hear him talk about the days when he was on campus just 20 years ago, Caleb, okay, when I was in school, you know, just across town over at Southern, he's there, and there's 1,800 students at Carey. 1,800. There's 5,000 now. There's right at 1,000. Every bed for a dorm is full on campus. They're buying land. Buildings can't go up fast enough. They need new dorms. There's this, that, the other. Everywhere you turn, every time you look on the website, every time you turn on the news, every time you get on social media, it's more good news for the William Carey Crusaders, and that's drawing people in. So it's not surprising to hear an Eli Collins make the decision and then revitalize themselves, come in, plug in to such a positive, just a place that you can't help but come and fall in love with it, and it frees you up to do great things. It's been revitalizing for me in my broadcasting career. It's been something for you that you've, for years now, drawn a bunch of joy being a part professionally and being able to work with William Carey. We love it. And the energy is contagious. So super happy for Eli. But the whole point of all of that is to say that's going to be a recurring theme, not only in baseball, but in particularly baseball with the way it's changing at the collegiate level, but across all sports. We're going to see players come in and just like a Rose Warren and then just re-energize their career and go to new heights.
And just to kind of put a cap on the weekend's activity, just talking about a couple more highlights and bright spots. Andrew Shira, night number one, returns to his Friday night role, did a good job out there, threw for 6 innings, gave up 4 hits, 3 runs, all of which were earned. This kind of happened later on in his activity as Carey was already up 8-0 before he gave up a run in the 5th inning. So all is forgiven there as Carey gets that win on Friday night, 13-3, walk-off run rule style. And the guy that we were just talking about, Eli Collins, was the one that hit the walk-off single to score Bradley Thomas. By the way, also had the first Crusader home run of the year and got my first opportunity to use TrackMan to say how far someone hit a home run, which was very fun. I have to admit, that's a fun amenity. And Josh, you need to get over there get over the shoulder in the booth just to see all that in action. They've got Eli Ladner up there, one of the student managers, over in the booth with a computer up, charting all the pitches and getting the reports out as well, in addition to what TrackMan's giving. It's just a real cool deal now.
What have you found to be the stat that is the most telling from that new system in terms of helping the broadcast and helping what you do, and as well as kind of trending to where it's going? I mean, is it certain spin rates? Is it certain velocity things? What has been the exit velo in terms of on ground balls and stuff? What's been the most telling stats for you?
Yeah, it's still in its infancy, so I'm still trying to get my dashboard set up to the way I like it, the stats that I want to see, because you can see as much as you want or as little as you want. I have found that on home runs, I love the distance that it goes, and any kind of fly ball too, just to kind of get a glimpse as to how far away somebody was from a home run or how massively it truly was. But from a pitching standpoint, it's cool to see spin rates. I never mentioned the RPMs on anything there, but to see, especially for an opposing team player, this Pikeville team was full of guys that would just throw absolute junk. And I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. They would throw 68, 69 miles an hour, and our guys couldn't touch it at times on that late night Saturday game. They would just, you know, throw it up there. It would have a little bit of spin to it, but all in all, guys just could not tee up on it. They would try to pull it, and that's hard to do when you're throwing that slow of a velocity compared to what you typically see from a fastball. And so seeing that, I think also this is a little cheesy, but seeing the strike zone, the way TrackMan shows it compared to what an umpire gives, will at least give you an idea of how much an umpire is factoring into a game. And it's not really utilized by me from a broadcast standpoint, except for, if I'm looking down at my stats and I didn't know where pitch was, I can look over the monitor real quick and be like, oh, that was inside. Oh, that was low. Oh, I just barely got it on the corner. You know, it allows me to multitask easier. But all in all, it is, I think, also good to see what the velocity is of the pitch coming out of a pitcher's hand, because that's way more accurate than just where it crosses a radar gun's beam as far as what's the top end velocity of a pitch. It's fastest when it comes straight out of the hand. And to see these guys like Bobby McGee is hitting 92 right now with a fastball. And who knows, he might touch 93, 94 as the season goes on. Who knows? But he's kind of become the de facto John Schneider. And to get to see those pitching stats, to see how many, RPMs and how much horizontal break a ball has. That's probably the other stat, is horizontal and vertical break in inches on a pitch to show just how much movement it had from a hitter's perspective. So all that is probably more than you bargained for on that answer, but those are the fun stats, the velocity, the break, and the strike zone as far as pure pitching stats.
No, it is. I do think as broadcasters, and we have to fight the urge to not getting so stat heavy with TrackMan, because baseball is already so stat heavy.
Oh, you can number
and
somebody
it
to
it
death.
Can bog down the casual fan.
Absolutely. And the thing that I like about a baseball broadcast, and I didn't do a great job of it for the first weekend of the year, just because you're trying to get all the players in order in my head and get some of the stories as we go throughout the year to relay. But baseball is a storyteller sport. It's not purely Absolutely. Statistics. And if I'm a listener of a baseball broadcast and I walk away feeling like I know more about a player or a team or just the sport of baseball in general, I'd say that's a great broadcast, in addition to the normal things of knowing what happened in the game. But that takes a broadcast from ordinary to extraordinary, if you can let the listener or viewer leave with something that they didn't know going in.
And to take that and twist it in a broadcasting world, this may give fans a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. These are conversations that we have all the time, and people might wonder, what do broadcasters talk about when they just get on the phone and are like critiquing one another or trying to get better at what they do? I found myself, it was obviously either Thursday or Saturday, I decided to explain what a Eurostep was to the listener.
Yeah.
Because the Eurostep is that either big exaggerated jab step right or left with the second step back in the opposite direction. It's a 1-2 right, left, left, right to go around a defender. We had a couple of guys that were extremely aggressive, and a lot of times in fast break situations had a really good, they were long, athletic, big Euro step. Dylan Brumfield, Chase Harris, for life and so forth. So we had four or five of them. It felt like within a half. And so I'm describing Eurostep, and I was like, let me explain that so people can better visualize what I'm saying, because there had to have been people that are going Eurostep, you know, and they needed to Google it to know what I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
So anytime you get a chance to, like you said, make people understand the game better, help them visualize it a little better, help them get little tidbits and stories about it better, that's what we're trying to do, is make people feel like, if they're listening in particular, that they're there and that they can see it.
I'm going to pick on Bert for just a second. And there was a moment of realization for me as a broadcaster that I use terms that sometimes maybe a person that doesn't listen to basketball very often may not know. And I used the term between the rings out front or between the circles. And Bert was sick for a series or had something come up where he had to stay at home on a road trip. And he said that he was listening. In fact, it may have been COVID time, so he may have had to stay home because of COVID. And he heard me say it a couple times, and he wasn't sure what I meant by that until, you know, later he had his whiteboard with the court on it. And he said, and then I figured it out. He circled the half court circle, and then he circled the 3-point arc, or, you know, the figurative circle that's at the top of the key on sure. either end of the floor. And he's like, so that's where they were. And I think about that and short corner and all that stuff. And the
short corner, left free throw line extended, right free throw line extended.
Elbows.
You're just always trying to add. Yep. I try to add feet to the shot, 20 footer, 15 footer, 17 footer, so that people can see that court in their mind. But you think about the way the game looked when Pistol Pete played,
mm-hmm.
or when, you know,
golly, how do they describe
there was
that?
No 3-point line. When Michael Jordan came into the NBA and there was no 3-point line. And there also weren't one-hand teardrop floaters, fadeaways, a lot of post-up mid-range fadeaways from guards. The expansion of some of those plays, and just like the Eurostep, prime example number one of how the game has changed and grown and how we've had to adapt as broadcasters to that.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Where do we want to go? Just a couple more.
We gotta
people.
Go softball.
Yeah. I'll put just a couple of names out there to close out baseball real quick. Matthew Davis. I really consider him and Andrew Shira 1A, 1B when it comes to starting pitching. Davis, who's a transfer from, now that I'm put on the spot, I think it's Little Rock. I think he was the transfer from Arkansas Little Rock. But he went six innings, gave up just two earned runs in that Saturday morning win, 8-3, really shined well. He had Lane Jarrow come in relief for that final inning. I really think that his stuff was really good, really effective, really didn't involve many base runners for Pikeville. Gave up a run in the second inning, that was it, that was early on in that game, and carry overcame. Had a little trouble with Josh McCord from the mound in the second game. That's what allowed Pikeville to go out in front big in that one, and carry couldn't come back and lose 6-3. But that was kind of an isolated deal in an inning where he started off with two outs and then walked a batter, hit one, and then walked another, and then at that point, I think he just kind of lost his fastball, and the bullpen couldn't get warmed up in time to come relieve him. So if he cannot have I'm not trying to be, you know, rude at all about Josh McCord, because I think he's a great pitcher. If he would avoid a mishap like that again, I think he'll be okay. It was just, I think, the speed at which the wheels kind of came off right there that caused that game to get out of hand, because right as soon as you load up the bases, their best hitter comes up and hits a triple. You know, and then it's just on. But all in all, I think Carey's in good hands. I think if Josh Alexander at the top of the order can figure things out, I don't think he'll be at the top of the order again for the next weekend set when Carey hosts Missouri Baptist in Campbellsville for four games. But I think once he figures out his hitting, I think he's going to be just like basically Bridley Thomas was a year ago, where Bridley started off, you know, searching for that first hit. Alexander has his first hit, but just in a slump to start off the year, and then I think he'll kick into high gear and finish high in the batting average when the season's all over. But all that said, I think you've got a good bit of return production, and I think Carey's going to be in great hands when it comes to pitching and batting. So we'll see how they do against tough competition this week, as Missouri Baptist is a high RPI team, picked in the top 25 preseason as well. Campbellsville, maybe not quite as high, but still a good opponent nonetheless. But yeah, let's turn our attention now to softball. About to start their year over in Alexandria, Louisiana, as they will face the host school first to start off the year on Thursday at 5 o'clock. And Josh, couple returners, obviously. Got a new coach in the mix as well on staff in Hannah Moak Brister. And boy, we've got a lot to look forward to with this group, especially with Ryan Hornsby coming back for another year pitching. A good bit of production has left when it comes to some of the senior hitters, but you still have a good base coming into this year.
Yeah, I think you kind of said it there. Ryan Hornsby, right? That's where it starts. When you've got a Kate Schroeder coming back, when you've got Ryan Hornsby coming back, you've got pieces on this team, but it starts inside this circle for this team in the fact that they will have an ERA. You would fully expect them to have a sub-2 team earned run average this year with the talent that they have inside of the circle. Ava Roussel, a freshman out of Holden, Louisiana, is in that rotation now. Rihanna Neiman is a transfer from Jones College. So they have got depth there. You've got Julia Shaw, who is a two-way player if need be, a junior out of ICC. So it's going to be interesting when we get Coach Fletcher on, hopefully as early as next week after that first weekend, and kind of recap that weekend and talk all about the season. But, you know, the team played really well in the fall. They won a ton of games. I believe the record was right around 9-2 over the fall, and they played some really good competition in the fall. Team batting average was around 260, but the ERA is, the pitching is what puts this team in such a good position. Coach said if they can score 3 runs a game, they're in good shape.
Yeah.
So you have some quick games. You expect a lot of wins, and when it matters, you expect Cary to be in the mix again this year, no question.
Yeah, defense wins championships, and boy, if it weren't for a really tough Jessup team coming into William Carey last year, you could have seen the Crusaders go on to the softball World Series in that regard. That's the goal now, is to get back to that final site as we begin the 2025 season. All right, final thoughts as we close the book on this podcast edition. I'm going to give at least my men's Crusader of the Week to Eli Collins. I mean, you can't go 500 on a weekend and start off the season with a 1,000 record mark, 4-for-4 with 5 RBIs without getting an accolade there. So he is my men's Crusader of the Week. From a women's basketball perspective, who do you think stands out for you as far as your candidate for that regard today?
Oh gosh, I've got to give honorable mention to Dylan Brumfield, just because of whatever run he had there. Mm-hmm. 25 points, Bruton Parker, 23 Middle Georgia, 34 against Life, and then 18. So just in the span of the week, he'll get to put 75 points, got a 25-point-per-game average over the week, has a really good chance to be the Southern States Athletic Conference Offensive Men's Basketball Player of the Week next week. Would not be shocked with all the other things he does in terms of rebounds and assists. The Women's Player of the Week, my goodness. Colton Blakeney is been playing really, really good. And it's the duo of Chenille Corpuz and Colton Blakeney. Those two, that 1-2 punch. Because here's the thing. Who do you double off of to be able to guard Corpuz and Blakeney? They both shoot it so well in the mid-range. Corpuz has got the little fadeaway. Blakeney uses the backboard so well. They tag team you so well in terms of their high-low action, one of them being on an elbow, one of them being up around the free throw line. And they've got great hands. They've got good feet. They shoot free throws well. But it's that post duo is what is going to continue to lead this team. They both will continue to play well. They both average right at 15 points and 9 rebounds a game. They are both averaging nearly a double-double. Those two would be my kind of co-nominees of Crusaders, Lady Crusaders of the Week, because of what they mean to this team game in, game out. And those are the two that can lead this team to the final side, I believe. No question.
All right. Sounds good to me. All right, Josh. Well, another podcast in the books, man. We went almost an hour here, right at an hour. So we have filled the minds and hearts of Crusader fans full of not just some broadcaster jargon back and forth, but also a lot of William Carey athletics conversation as well. Hey, sometimes you got to go an hour because the radio show can't withhold us and condense all that information into what ends up being about 42, 45 minutes of, you know, talking on the air. So glad sure, we got to absolutely. Do this. And best of luck out there as Carey takes on Tougaloo when you go cover them.
Yeah, thank you so much. And it's always a pleasure.
All right, for Josh West, I'm Caleb Hamill. Until next time, good night, God bless, and go Saders.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.